My name is Leonie Green. I'm Head of External Affairs for the Solar Trade Association. Before that, I did the same role for the Renewable Energy Association. Before that, I was Political Advisor to Greenpeace. And before that, I worked in the Deputy Mayor's office in London, actually. So I've been there.
How did you come to be interested in working on energy issues?
Well, it was actually when I was at the GLA and I was working for the Deputy Mayor and Ken Livingstone was Mayor, and there was huge political interest in generating renewable low-carbon power in London. And I saw for myself how difficult it was in practice for them to do that, even when there was a really strong political will to do that. So I got involved in some very interesting projects, working on the concept of the London Climate Change Agency, which Boris disbanded. But when I went off to Greenpeace, I did a big report from them called Decentralising Power, which was an analysis of why it's so difficult to do bottom-up energy and how actually the technologies that you need for a low-carbon system are much more decentralised and what needs to change, if you like, from government to support that. And from there, I then went to the Renewable Energy Association, if you like, to the front line, and I lobbied to get legislation and support for the takeoff of these technologies. And we were very successful, actually. We got something called the feed-in tariff, which has led to 650,000 solar homes across the UK now. And it became obvious to me, working in the REA, that something extraordinary was happening in solar power. And so I chose very much to focus on solar and went full-time into the Solar Trade Association.
Thank you so much for
that. Just going to a different category. Back in the day, a lot of people didn't used to take energy for granted, but nowadays a lot of young people tend to take a lot of energy for granted in terms of charging their phones and not just being aware of it, etc. In your opinion, how could this be addressed?
I think that's a really good question, because electricity is so clean to use at the point of use. You know, you just flick a switch and you don't actually see the consequence, or, you know, the people living with the consequence. So I think education, incredibly important. And it's so important to change how we generate energy. So I think something like solar, which can make energy so visible, is something that I think is quite good for capturing people's attention about what a very different sort of energy system could look like. But I think, you know, the message needs to get through loud and clear somehow. I'm not the only expert on that. That however clean electricity can look coming from the plug, actually the footprint of it is huge, especially when you're talking about big centralised power. You're talking about two-thirds of the energy even being lost before it hits the plug. So it is very polluting.
Do you think there's a lack of education in energy in the public community?
I do, and I also think that the media debate, the level of the media debate, doesn't help. There's too little quality information and quality argument, too little meaningful engagement actually with the public about their views. And I think that's quite frustrating. There's a lot of politics that goes on in the media that I think people don't realise. So a lot of newspapers actually have a very party political position and a vested interest in certain technologies. And therefore there's a lot of myth-making, if you like, about some forms of energy, particularly renewables. So, yes, I think in terms of kind of educating the public and engaging with the public, we need a better quality of debate, really, in the UK.
My question is, based on the photo booth concept that you just did, thank you for doing that, what was the question you wrote out?
Well, it was, what would you ask back from 2040, I think it was, something like that. My question was, why didn't we do everything we could to boost solar power?
Why did you ask that?
Because it's frustrating in the solar power industry that we're not getting the coherent programme that we need to get solar off subsidy and competitive as soon as possible, and you know, ensure that there's a really good framework that really works. So, for example, we've had a lot of solar farms, we've had a lot of domestic schemes, but what we haven't had is what dominates in Europe, which is very big factories, warehouses, schools actually are taking off quite well, but, you know, sort of hospitals, public buildings. So, you know, we really need to be doing everything we can at this stage, I think, to boost clean energy.
In your view, what is the relationship between energy and the economy?
Energy and the economy? Gosh, where to begin? I mean, you know, even if you talk to the Bank of England or the Chancellor, they will tell you how key energy is in driving inflation and how competitive we are. It's very important for competitiveness as well. Internationally, there's a lot of envious looking at the States, which has very low energy prices at the moment because of shale. But even the US has a specific program to get solar below the cost of gas by 2020. And they see huge competitive advantage internationally for doing that. So the role with the economy is colossal. And what solar power offers is the prospect of totally inflation-free energy. So that's really very transformative, totally secure and with no unpredictability or, you know, sudden price hikes, which can be very destabilising. So actually the outlook for the economy is extraordinary, actually, to shift in that sort of very steady energy future.
International corporations such as Starbucks and Apple, they obviously use a lot of energy to build their product, to sustain it, etc. So how do you see them surviving without it?
Well, they've actually been some of the first movers on solar in a big way. So Apple has gone for some massive solar farms, I think to power data centres. And what was the other organisation you mentioned?
Starbucks.
I don't know about Starbucks. Google has just announced that it's going to make some big investments. Walmart is massive. So Asda, it's called here, but it's owned by Walmart. They've done colossal amounts of solar power in the States. IKEA has a programme of going for very large rollout of solar across its stores, not just selling it domestically. So actually, in a business that is very conscious of how it's seen by the public and actually that rather cares about its impact is moving sometimes faster than government to make this stuff happen. But you mentioned Starbucks, and yes, I haven't seen sort of populist high street places do it. It's not always practical in that context, but in many instances it would be. And yes, there's no reason why all of them shouldn't be doing it.
In our bid to gain energy to power our own economy, how can we ensure equality and fairness in the country we trade with?
How can we ensure fairness and
fairness
and equality?
Fairness.
Across the country.
We trade with.
Oh, with the countries we trade with. Gosh, that's a challenging question.
It's just that because the background of this was we realised how poverty and inequality is very so high internationally, globally, and it's something and energy is not energy westernised to what less economically developed countries are not seen as such anymore. So that's what the
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that energy has been the big missing bit of international development. I think awareness is growing, actually, and the potential for solar in Asia and Africa is phenomenal. So India has a 100 gigawatt target by 2022, which is just staggering. I mean, if you consider we have 8 gigawatts today, I mean, that is colossal. China as well is going for absolutely massive growth. Bangladesh, I think, is going for very large amounts. And Africa has been, you know, increasingly... one of the projects that was set up was called Solar Aid, and it's not a charity, it doesn't hand out, but what it does is facilitate the sale of lamps across Africa, simple kind of solar-powered lamps, which enable kids to study late into the night and people to charge their phones and all sorts, and it's really led to a lot more innovation and economic activity. So I think actually, while the role of solar globally is transformative, I think in developing countries where you've still got nearly a billion people without access to power, it's utterly life-changing. I mean, really transformative. So I think the more that we can ensure that people have access to energy, you know, the fairer those kind of relationships will be. But I would also say that I think that fossil fuels are a very big factor in the distortions in international relationships. So, for example, when you had the oil shocks in the 70s, that plunged a lot of African countries into the sort of very unsustainable and crippling levels of debt that you saw.
Would you mind elaborating on oil shocks? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, right. In the 70s, there were these very big oil shocks, big constraint supplies, and suddenly you saw the price rocket. And a lot of African countries were left in terrible debt, actually, as a result of that. And this is the problem, that when you have these very concentrated reserves, you know, whether it's Putin in Russia with his gas, or the Middle East with some rather concerning human rights practices, you know, when you have such dependency on these kinds of fuels for just for the essence of your economy, then you get some very serious distortions in international relationships, which I think are very unfair. And I think what I like about solar power is it's such a kind of disruptive, anarchic, sort of democratising technology, in that it can be owned by millions, even billions of people, not just a handful of companies. So I think that really is quite transformative.
Have you heard of that, that saying of if the Sahara Desert was the size of a Mars bar, you can get a solar panel farm the size of a postage stamp on that Mars bar to power the whole Earth?
Oh, well, yes, I've heard things like that. Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much energy from the sun, and actually we forget that fossil fuels is actually all solar energy, and it's just the crushed bodies of plants and animals that soaked up the sun, really. And then we forget that, but that took hundreds of millions of years, and we're kind of burning all that in the space of a few decades. It's kind of terrifying.
I'm very curious, because solar power, would you mind, there is a big talk, and in terms of education, I think it's slowly making its way, because it's. I visited Holland.
Oh, yeah.
A month ago, probably. When I visited my friend.
Yeah.
This is about me who are not as educated that I just suspected.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to their dad, he was very conscious, energy conscious about
right.
solar panels. Everything was very. I guess my question to you is, how long would it take for everyone to be properly educated about solar power.
That's a really good question, and it's a challenge for us as well in the industry, because I mean, we do have a world-class amount of domestic solar in the UK, so you know, 650,000 homes is very good. So there is good engagement already. But, of course, it could always be better. And, of course, as an industry, we need to be moving off subsidy. We need to be good at, you know, selling this stuff direct to the public. And, you know, that's a challenge for us. It's a kind of journey we're on. You know, we need to learn from, you know, educators and people like you who are outreaching, because it's not really something we've traditionally done, you know, try to engage the public. So we set up a website to try and make it easier for people to understand solar. In reality, we got so snowed under with government regulation, we didn't really get to push that in the way we wanted. We've done a kind of fun populist song about solar, actually, that we recorded in the solar power recording studio, that we're hoping to release that later this week. So, yeah, if you want to do anything with that, that would be great. It's quite good, actually. It's quite catchy. Even people who slag it off end up singing it sort of 5 minutes later. I think it's quite good. It's about climate change, and it's kind of quite educational, but the chorus is actually quite catchy, and there's quite a funky bit in the middle. I helped kind of bring it together, but if I'd sung on it, nobody would listen to it, I'm afraid.
I wanted to ask, there are benefits to solar power, but to balance out the coin, what are the negative effects?
It's quite hard to think of negatives. I mean, one of the complaints that you hear sometimes from more aesthetically oriented people is that they don't like the look of the panels. And you can get them done badly, you can get them kind of positioned well, but some people just don't like the aesthetics of a kind of bluish haze on a roof. And actually, the products are really diversifying. So you can now get very black solar that goes on very nicely on black slates. You can even get coloured tiles. So Switzerland, someone in Switzerland is producing them in white even, and you know, all sorts of terracotta and you name it, all those kinds of shades. And also you're getting integrated roof products. So the tile is actually the roof material itself, and that looks very, very smart. So I think the industry is trying to respond to those concerns about aesthetics. It is a bit more expensive. I think one of the other issues that's raised is the issue of energy payback. So manufacturing crystalline solar is a very energy-intensive process. I mean, you're talking about kind of melting silicon into ingots. It takes a lot of energy. But I think the good side of that, it's usually about 2-year payback. So in 2 years of generating power, say in the UK, it would recover that energy and then you'd just be into complete carbon saving. But I think that's the industry is getting better and better. It's getting more and more efficient. It's using less materials. The power supply in some of those countries is getting greener. So I hope that that's something that the industry is improving all the time. Well, I think wind power is wonderful. It's very complementary to solar. I don't really get the aesthetic sort of anti-arguments, really. I mean, it's kind of a classic kind of ways of seeing. You know, it's all in the eye of the beholder. And I think when you understand how important these technologies are, for me, it's just a sort of hope on a stick. So I like them very much, actually. They are very complementary. They generate power generally at times when it's less good for solar. So over the year, you get much more solar over the summery months and much more wind in winter. So they're very complementary. What do I think about fracking? I've really struggled to get good quality, objective, factual information about fracking. That worries me, and you read some quite scary reports about some of the health impacts. I read an article recently, you always have to take the stuff with a pinch of salt, but about how Oklahoma earthquakes in Oklahoma have risen from just 2 or 3 a year to every week. Every day, actually, I think it was. I mean, it was astonishing. So, and now the officials are admitting that this has actually had something to do with a massive rise in earthquakes. So, at the same time, if you have a technology that can save carbon, then it's very important to use it. I remain unclear about how safe it is, how much carbon fracking can save because of the risk of leakage and the huge trust that you would have to put in companies around that. So Professor Paul Eakins, for example, suggested that even very small levels of methane leakage could result in it having a higher intensity than coal. So my honest answer is I feel I don't really have the facts and I find it very difficult to get hard of them. If it can be done to save carbon, I don't have an ideological problem with it. But it's quite clear that there are some big risks, I think, around this technology.
In your line of work, how are you reducing fuel poverty in the UK? I understand through solar panels, but through that, what you do, how are you reducing?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, and it's something we're kind of conscious of at the Solar Trade Association, because the reality is it often is people with some cash to spend that is driving this technology forward. And that's important, actually, because you know, we've done a lot of analysis about how much actually hits households in terms of the bill. So we've calculated that if you wanted to even double the solar targets for the UK up to 25 gigawatts, and that would give you more than 2 million solar homes and tens of thousands of commercial businesses and what have you, it would only be £13 in people's bills a year, and that's to deliver a complete revolution.
Could you just repeat that again?
Yes.
25.
Gigawatts, £13.
It's
a lot of power. And not only that, we came up with something called the Solar Independence Plan. So it's a plan for government to get off subsidy. And by 2020, that would be the impact on people's bills.
£13.
I'm just,
I live with housemates. And imagine paying for that. That's very affordable. That's very, not everyone
yes.
would be.
I know for all the hysterical headlines, you think, oh my God, it's costing hundreds of pounds. Yeah. It's not true. It's not true. Well, that's great you have that reaction because, you know, we are very conscious of the cost. And, you know, through that investment, we really think we could get solar subsidy. And again, if you're in fuel poverty, you're talking about technology that can give you a much, much more stable bill. And actually, we've worked with a lot of social housing associations to try to get the feed-in tariff to be improved, so the policy mechanism to better support social housing. And in fact, I'm giving evidence to the London inquiry later this week, actually, and we're trying to get them to be much more proactive on solar. And one of the things I'll be talking about is housing associations, because a quarter of London's property is social housing.
If this is a myth, do correct me on this.
Yes,
because
yeah.
obviously solar power feeds off the sun, as we don't get that a lot in the UK, wouldn't that affect in how much energy we get?
Yes, I mean, this is, to be honest, a bit of a myth about solar power, because it actually functions on daylight intensity. And, of course, it only generates when there's daylight. You know, that's a criticism. Sometimes it doesn't generate in the night, but it's kind of a pointless one.
So it doesn't,
yeah. But what's happening is you're starting to see more and more storage now. So Tesla came out with this very sexy-looking battery storage pack that means that you can store your solar and consume much more through the day, so it becomes less problematic, the generation time. And actually, you know, in the UK, the sun resource is colossal everywhere. So we have about the same solar resource as Berlin in Germany, or Munich, which has a massive, massive amount of solar. So it's cheaper now to generate the same amount of power from solar as it is to generate, for example, offshore wind. Very soon it will be as cheap to generate solar as it is from onshore wind, literally within a year or two. So there is a colossal resource, and you can harvest it pretty cheaply. And when storage comes online, you'll be able to do it 24/7.
I guess I'm still trying to understand this process in my head, so I'm still very curious. Is solar power like... in my head, I see it as like a measuring cup in that sense. So
right.
you store all this energy, and then it's still used during the day. How I'm just trying to understand how this works.
How does it work? Well, it's a phenomenon. It's a phenomenon, really, and it was actually explained by Einstein. People think he won his Nobel Peace Prize for relativity theory, but it wasn't. It was part of the things he did in a paper about light was explain the photoelectric effect, and that's the phenomenon from which solar panels kind of work. So it's this principle that when certain materials are hit with a certain intensity of light, it causes a little electron to be released. And all the solar panel does is line them up in a nice line so that they can be used. Yeah, and then the electricity can just be tapped. So it is a phenomenon. It's unlike any other source of power generation where there's usually burning or a mechanism, moving mechanism, generating some sort of kinetic energy. This is the only technology where nothing moves, there's no moving parts, no wear and tear. And this is why, for this reason, you know, we don't know how long it lasts even, because the systems built in the 1970s are still generating power today. And it does annoy me when I hear solar power being talked of quite rudely in some certain bits of the press, because it is extraordinary technology. It is space-based technology. I mean, it really was honed by NASA in space. And, you know, we always say if you want to know what's coming in the future of solar power, you look at what's happening in space. And you've got solar power with over 40% efficiency, so turning 40% of the sun's energy that hits it into power. That's staggering. It's extremely expensive to do that. But over time, that will become the norm down on planet Earth.
In the whole energy talk, transport is the most consumed form of energy, would you say, in England or in the world?
Yeah.
But how does solar panel, how is
fit with that?
Your company yet fit with
that? Yeah. Really good question. And
we've heard a lot of talk about stuff like the solar panel paints and stuff like that. They want to paint vehicles with solar panel. Solar panel paint,
etc. Okay. I'm not sure how much the paint would generate. I mean, I think the model that is taking off already is the kind of Elon Musk Tesla model again, where you have a battery storage unit, a solar power system, and an electric vehicle. And together you can power your home and your car as one sort of unit. And so that's very much seen as a sort of paradigm shift, really, in energy and in the way forward. The amount of electric vehicles we have now is quite small, but I understand the rate of growth is phenomenal. And the same, I think, is happening with storage. So Tesla sold out of their storage system within days into next year. I mean, crazy, the amount of orders. So I think that's quite hopeful, getting, if you can get electric vehicles. I think the danger is if you just look at the electric vehicle and don't green the power that it's running on, that can actually not really be terribly green at all. But there are other issues too around transport, around air quality, which in London is a massive issue now. I mean, it's so bad. Tens of thousands of premature deaths. And again, if you move to this kind of solar EV electric vehicle type model of transport, then you're getting away from those kind of problems as well. So there's massive extra benefits.
What sort of legacy would you like to leave for future generations around energy?
Well, if I'm allowed to say, I'm quite pleased with my work so far, really, getting hundreds of thousands of, or certainly being part of that, it was a big team effort. It has been satisfying to help get an industry going in the UK. I sometimes feel I've done my bit, and I would like to kind of put my feet out and paint pictures. I'd like to be a frustrated artist. So maybe that's a bit smug. I mean, to be honest, the battle over climate change is so far from won. I mean, the danger is so acute, actually. I feel very conscious of that. And so what I'd like to do is just kind of create as much change as one person can, really.
One last question is, are you an optimist or a pessimist when thinking about the future of energy?
Gosh. I think I'm generally optimistic because I work in solar, and so I work in the solution. And just to give you a really hopeful little factoid, if the rate of growth of solar power over the last 20 years, the average rate of growth, which is 30% a year, was to continue, we'd be generating the same amount of power from solar in just 18 years as the same as world power demand.
World.
You need to repeat that so
okay.
I can Okay,
so if solar power keeps growing at the rate it has historically, which has been 30% per annum, if it carries on with that rate of growth, it will generate in 18 years' time power equivalent to world power demand.
Wow.
So that's the potential if governments can sustain the rate of growth. But the reality is that doesn't necessarily mean you're meeting all the power of solar because of the complexity about when it generates and all that stuff. But it gives you a picture of, gives you a handle of how quickly change could happen. And that's what we need, you know, something to happen like mobile phones just to ignite. The hope is there, but you ask me honestly, I think the science is so serious now. You're literally within years of having to bend the curve to get away from a kind of dangerous situation. I know a lot of scientists I know are quite head in hands about being able to meet the 2-degree target. And I think we're going to be in a much more dangerous world, really. Probably, I think we'll miss that. That's my gut feeling. But we might hopefully ratchet up our efforts to avert anything worse. But having said that, you know, the science is actually unclear in some areas in terms of feedback effects. And things seem to be happening a lot faster than some scientists predicted, like sea level rise. So, you know, there is not a minute to be complacent about this.